On today's episode of Back the Bird, we are pleased to be joined by one of the greatest players and certainly one of the greatest defensive players to ever play the game of lacrosse, Brody Merrill. Another short banter today. I really want to let the interview stand by itself. Thankful for Brody for coming on and thankful for the Bird Gang. This is episode 100. It's been a crazy ride. Thank you for following along the whole way, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. Let's get into it. This is episode 100 of Back of the Bird. Run, baby, run. If you want a sign, this is it. You're mad, your magic, you're as hot as a gun. You want to play with fire, consider this. You'll chase the thrill if it's worth the hit. Cause you never ever want to work for it. Take your first ride and run, baby, run. All right, this is it. The one you've been waiting for 100 times. You've heard our voices now. Holy shit. Episode 100 of Back to the Bird. Yes. And we have now implemented the what is that, like a siren or something?
We got sound effects, boys and girls. We
finally figured it out. I think that was about 14 seconds into episode one that I swore. So sorry for the children out there already. But again, presented by Cottage Springs. We appreciate you guys. Get out there. Check out the Cottage Springs for the holiday season. Punched up. No better way to walk into a family gathering than a punched up Cottage Springs case. So,
punched up with your family. It's all good.
Yep, exactly. This is exciting, man. Again, we'll touch on it as we kind of check in with everybody here, but 100 times is, it's crazy. But really, really excited about it. So why don't we kick it right over, Paulie? What's going on, buddy?
Yeah, buddy. All good. Just, like I was kind of saying before, for our great little interview here, just been grinding away as a solo parent. Dory was in Halifax. So just, you know, two kids, just being dad husband of the year. So, you know, just in the trenches, as they call it.
Yeah, grinding. Like I said, it's you finally said this in before we got on with our guest here, Brody Merrill, coming up. But half the year you spend as a dad. Summer months, you do your thing, and then you do the old flip flop. I think you got pretty good. Winter, you want to be inside anyways. You got so you can just do the parenting that.
6 months a year, I'm a dad.
6 months of your pro golfer, 6 months of your dad. I think you won that hypothetical we were talking about a couple weeks ago. But
they better enjoy this time, those little, just kidding. No, it's been good, man. Just it was nice not traveling this weekend, but yeah, man, just it's been good. You know, we're light at the end of the tunnel here for all of us. Season's yep. around the corner.
It's coming. Donnie, what's going on with you?
Yep, same. All good. I thought a really awesome interview with Brody. We had him for a while, so thanks to him for coming on and really some great stories in there and some great inspiration and stuff. So other than that, same as we've been saying the last couple of weeks, right? Just getting ready for camp here. We play next Friday to start, which is like crazy soon, and just trying to get everything ready to go.
Where are you guys? Are you guys off this weekend?
We are in Six Nations Friday and Saturday. Yep.
Games or just practice?
Just practices. So
nice.
How about you, Lomi?
Yeah, we're down. We are down in Rochester against New York. So that'll be a fun one to play against those guys. Running the arena, the old double birds running up and down.
Revenge game.
Your low backs are gonna be sore.
I texted my good buddy of mine there, Kevin Brownell. I asked him if he was ready for his free Cairo adjustment Saturday night. but camp's fun, man. It's exciting and there's a lot of stuff happening. Paulie, I remember when we're in Roch together, we used to always play Georgia, right? Like for that like late exhibition game, and the fans would come in. I don't think the fans are gonna be able to come in this year, but. Last one before we kind of get going here. Hopefully things are all right at the border there. It's a little bit sketchy today, but explosion. I don't know if that thing's open again or what, but
get a boat. You need that Rochester Clipper. Get on the old Rochester Clipper, get that going again.
Is that that was, when did they stop doing that?
I think right after they opened it. It lasted for like a week.
Right after they realized there's like 10 people a month who really need to go to Rochester.
It's a non-corporate or commercial, non-commercial ferry for just passengers. How many people are like, fuck yeah?
Yeah, the amount of people who need to make that trip and don't need a car on either end is very low.
Yeah, exactly. As we kind of mentioned, we're going to get into a little bit of our banter and, you know, talking, catching up on a few things after the interview. But we've got a great one for you. Obviously, you're going to hear it in Donnie's intro when we do this, jump into this interview. But, man, what a player. What a guy. The stuff he's done for the game, the effect he's had on it is going to last for a ton of years. I'm sure he's just going to continue to do it. So I think maybe we just jump into it. What do you think?
Yeah, check it right over.
I'm going to see if I can not read the one that Donnie wrote last time. I like how you edited that out.
So I edited it out for the listeners. I Ron Burgundy'd Lomi last week, and he didn't actually say what I wanted him to say, but I snuck something in our ad read. So I edited it out. I did you a solid.
Yeah, so anyways, at Lucky Penny Media, we're a full-service marketing company without hefty agency ball sacks. We understand your brand is everything to you, and when working together, it means everything to us. You're more than just a client. You're a partner and a teammate. Our philosophy is simple. You grow, I grow, we grow. So here he is, Brody Merrill.
All right. We are pleased to be joined this week by arguably the best defensive player to ever play the game of lacrosse. This Orangeville native was actually born in Montreal, according to Wikipedia, I hope that's right, before moving to Ontario as a kid. He played college lacrosse at Georgetown University, where he was a two-time All-American and the winner of the Schmeisser Award for NCAA Player of the Year. He was drafted first overall in the 2005 NLL Entry Draft by the Portland Lumberjacks. After recently retiring, he ranks third in all-time NLL games played. He has the most loose balls. He's won Defensive Player of the Year once, Transition Player of the Year three times. In the field game, he won two World Championships as a member of Team Canada and represented Canada five times at the World Field Championships. He is the all-time games played leader in professional lacrosse, where he won three titles in professional field lacrosse. Where he won three titles and Defensive Player of the Year six times. He played 4 years in the PLL, one of which I was lucky to be a part of, where the award for the LSM of the Year is already named after him and was already named after him. For episode 100 of Back of the Bird, welcome Brody Merrill.
That's it. That's our
all-time best. That took me like 45 minutes.
Episode 100, too. I'm honored for that.
That's good stuff. Well, I mean, we'll just kind of dive into what's going on right now. What's keeping you busy? How are things?
I've been getting that question a lot lately, and I feel like it's as you guys all know, like you kind of live double lives when you're playing professional lacrosse, right? And it's mostly on the weekend, so not a lot's changed for me throughout the week, but it's finding maybe I have a little bit more balance now on the weekends and all in with my kids' sports and just doing regular dad stuff. So it's been good.
Well, we might as well. Well, I mean, when we do these interviews, we kind of go chronologically with guys and, you know, things come along the way. So we've got a bunch of notes for you. We could probably talk for 3 hours. So I think we're going to try to keep this mainly to the indoor game. And, you know, on that note, maybe kind of start off by just going back to the beginning. You know, your Wikipedia page says born in Montreal, but, you know, obviously moved to Ontario kind of as a young kid. So when did you pick up a stick and how did you get into the game?
Yeah, it was so my family's from Montreal and it was right around, if you guys remember, Paulie would maybe like there was the referendum that was going on and you saw a lot of Quebecers kind of head to Ontario and you know, that's what my family did. And we randomly, picked Orangeville and, you know, it still is a small town, but it's even smaller at the time. And, I think we moved there in September. So I played a hockey season And then obviously in Orangeville, all my hockey buddies were playing lacrosse in the summertime too. And so it was just that. I'm sure like many, you know, young Canadian lacrosse players, kind of it was what to do in the summertime. And I picked it up, and I like to say that it clicked right away. It's something I did enjoy, but it wasn't, it was more just something to do in the summertime. I was always so into hockey, and then that dynamic kind of changed as I got older.
How old were you when you moved?
I was 8 years old, 8 or 9 years old. So what
were you doing in Montreal, like during the summers in Montreal? Because hey, let's say big Peter Merrill, quarterback for the Montreal Alouettes. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but he was slinging the rock back then too. So what were you doing during the summers?
Yeah, I was really big into soccer in the summers. And it's funny because I carried over to Orangeville. So I'd play soccer and lacrosse, but I vividly remember going from a soccer game, and somehow I was like working the back gate of my brother's game and in my soccer. And just getting chirped, and then the last day of hockey or the last day of soccer, because it's such a lacrosse town, so I was really big into soccer early in Montreal, and then that just went away when I got the Orangeville.
Boys are just ruthless to you, eh? Yeah. 8 years old, just gumming you on the end of the bench.
That's so funny. How'd you get out of soccer? Well, I was ruthlessly chirped into into picking lacrosse. That's so funny.
You know what's funny on that note, by the way, is Tracy Kolesky started playing lacrosse because he went to Foot Locker with his dad, and John Grant Jr. and his dad made fun of TK for buying baseball cleats. So that's like at least two like legends who basically got bullied into playing lacrosse, and then it, you know, wound up changing.
I do that now with young kids and trying to get some kids into the game. I definitely use some of those same tactics.
they still run true. It's never fail. If you guilt somebody bad enough and make them feel like they're not doing the cool thing, then it'll work. We'll get them hook, line, and sinker. But what was it like growing up? I mean, you kind of touched on it. It's a big lacrosse community, but for you, what was it like growing up and playing for those teams in Orangeville?
Yeah, so it was funny because Brandon Miller was just talking about this. I was at the Northman banquet, and there was an award named after his brother Kyle, who was my best friend growing up. Myself and another guy by the name of Matt Marshall. I don't know if you guys know Skippy at all, but he really played. and we weren't very good. Like it was, Orangeville has changed now. It's like kind of a machine. All the teams are strong and competing in A, but we're really like a small, small program community. And I always remember getting called a hick, playing. I'm like, live in a subdivision. so things have changed, but we were never really, like we always joke, we won the D novice championship and we were never very strong. Until junior, but like when I look back at my early days of like following sports, like it was always the Northman, like going to Friday nights, like the 1993 to 95 teams. Like I can name all those players and all those teams. And so that kind of got into all our blood. And that was our dream to play for the Northman. And the thing with Orangeville, and it still is to this day, like, and you kind of have a lot of the, we were a smaller center, but we would get, Peter Veltman from who was in Halton, or, Brian Kazarian is the Owen Sound guy. So, that's when, and my rookie year was like Josh Sanderson and Phil Sanderson and Brucey Codd. These were all kind of the older guys on the team. So, that's when, I got, more of the taste of kind of, Northland lacrosse and what it could be.
I'm gonna assume T was coaching when you were a rookie, or who was coaching junior?
No, it was actually Lindsay at that time. Okay. So yeah, I had Lindsay for all 4 or 5 years at junior. And he had just taken over for Terry maybe a year or so prior. And it was I can remember getting healthy scratch. I actually got cut from the team my rookie year, and then somebody gotten hurt. And I was working at Sanderson Sports, and I remember driving. That's actually one of my coolest memories with T, driving to my first game that I was a healthy scratch at four, and he kind of, hey, chin up, you'll get your time and keep working. So I was originally sent down to Junior B in Halton, but then somebody got hurt, and I just kind of, eventually got in the lineup and just started to kind of establish myself from there. But, I feel like Dan and I had a very similar, like, we played against each other through minor. We were always battling each other for like B and the like mid range B championship. So we had a similar path that way.
And you guys were battling so much that you decided to drop the gloves at one time too. I wasn't there, but I heard it was a real slobber knocker.
Yeah, it was, if you saw us both at Howard 15, 14, like we were like, the same height, but maybe like 120 pounds.
My brother always says, what does he always say? Two olive oils going at it from Popeye.
Yeah. It was like, we had the build of like female supermodels, like both fighting at the time.
Just a Victoria's Secret fight going on in the PWB championship down there. Oh, that's funny.
Who, and just to cap off minor, who was coaching you all the way up then before you got to junior?
I had a mix. I'm trying to remember. I had this guy Billy Fitzpatrick, who's still kind of kicking around the lacrosse circles, and a guy by the name of Andy Graham. It's funny in Orangeville. It's really cool in that my first coach was Shane Sanderson, and he's probably not quite as well known as the other Sandersons, but he coached the Detroit Turbos, and he was a great, awesome, awesome coach and great guy. He actually, even through junior, like, we always remained close. Like, you guys remember from going out in the intermissions in between periods at Tony Rose, he would always be a guy that I would always check in with and talk with. And, but I had, like, it's funny enough, like, Lindsay and Terry coached me both in hockey. And I didn't have T until in major lacrosse playing with Brampton. And Lindsay throughout junior.
Okay, nice. Were they the same in hockey and lacrosse? Same coaching styles or no?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Lynn's and I, like, I feel like reflecting back on it, it definitely, like, playing for the same, and then also like being around Josh and Flip and Brandon and guys like Rusty and Chris, just like a really, really competitive environment. Like, I remember we would meet before games upstairs in the Tony Rose, and like, you would be, you'd be on edge a little bit, right? It was so, so competitive, but they pushed you, and it's all like, kind of, you'd say it's old school stuff, but it's stuff that I think will stay true, throughout, the history of lacrosse is, they were always preaching, loose balls and team toughness and, playing hard, playing disciplined, playing as a team. And they had different ways to go about it. And I remember actually Flip telling me this early, is like, hey, don't listen to the noise, listen to the message. And it was good advice. So I always enjoyed it. I mean, I always enjoyed being pushed like that and that intensity. And yeah, maybe, at times a little bit crazy. I think it obviously has worked, and it's kind of the Northman formula, and it has become kind of the Northman way.
That's awesome, man. And there's a little message in there for kids out there. I mean, if the greatest defensive player of all time can get healthy scratched his first game, don't take things personally when they don't go right away. I think might be a little bit of a message there. I'm sure that was, there was quite the message in the drive you talked about. But let's kind of move into Salisbury. How did you get down there?
Yeah. So it go again, I've been influenced by the Sanderson family so much, like, it, and in this case, it was Chris Sanderson who, you know, was really the first person from our town to go off and play high level NCAA. He went to University of Virginia, and he would come back and run field lacrosse camps in town. He'd bring all his UVA buddies back, and it was called True North Lacrosse, and it started as Top Gun Lacrosse, and all the Northmen would work it. And so that's when I was introduced to field lacrosse, and he kind of took Kyle Skippy and I kind of under his wing a little bit, and just through his kind of network in the game, and was kind of put that NCAA on our radar. He had a good friend by the name of Brian Rogers who recruited Kyle and I. Kyle had actually gone down there and got in there first, and then Brian had recruited. He came up and watched one of my junior B hockey games, So went down with Kyle and another guy by the name of Jamie Giles, who was a Whippy guy. And it was a whole new different world. Like, we had never been exposed to that. And we're really lucky because it was a big kind of turning point for me personally. I know it was for Kyle as well. And first opportunity to really play, you know, more organized, like, or we had played some field lacrosse, you know, around Ontario, but it was really like kind of more higher level field lacrosse, and it was a big stepping stone for me for sure.
Were you playing hockey and lacrosse there?
Yeah. So it was fun. It was really fun. Like, it was a much better league than I anticipated. My other buddy, Skippy, Chris set him up to go down to St. Paul's, and he was playing in St. Paul's, Maryland. And he was like, man, this hockey down here is like so easy. Like, I feel like I'm Wayne Gretzky here. Like, I'm scoring. Like, and so I went to Salisbury, and like, that New England hockey loop is pretty legit. And John and playing at Deerfield, they're going to Deerfield, I'm sure got exposed to that. So it was like, but it kind of rejuvenated my hockey career a little bit. I had some great coaches there, and kind of, it was after I committed to Georgetown. Maybe there's something to be said for it. As like, I started to kind of play my best hockey after I'd already like committed and gone. I kind of chosen to go the lacrosse route, but yeah, it was an amazing experience for sure.
Paulie, that's your layup to talk about any Oakville Blades stuff.
I mean,
I'm talking to the whole time. I know his number's retired up in.
Thanks. See, the guests are now doing it. The word spread so fast.
All right, I let all my teammates know that it's up there hanging in the rafters. But me and Brody played for enough times together. He's heard probably the same story over and over again three or four times. Probably my brothers told him too. And if my brother didn't tell him, you know, my old man told you at least.
So what year in high school did you commit to Georgetown?
So the same guy, it was a funny story. So this guy, Brian Rogers, recruited me to go to Salisbury. But the day before I left to go to Salisbury, he left and went to Georgetown. And so he recruited actually Kyle and I to go to Georgetown, and another former Salisbury coach went to Cornell, and that's where Kyle ended up going. But then when I went to Georgetown, he left right before I got there. So
he's running from you.
We got to play for him, but he's like, I actually still keep in touch with him to this day. It's like, it's just crazy how things worked out. But and thankful for him and him kind of advocating for me. Seeing something in me at that time.
Were there any other schools like at that point too, or was there only Georgetown, or were there other schools like in the mix as well?
Yeah, I remember actually I really wanted to go to Virginia, and Chris was kind of helping me through that process, and And I remember I still have all these letters from Virginia, and I felt like I was getting pretty heavily recruited. And then I remember Coach Starzy came up and watched me play in St. Catharines junior at the time. And then he offered a scholarship. It wasn't like very much, and it wasn't really affordable. So it was a kind of a letdown that way. But I remember, yeah, visiting, like Lars Tiffany was at Penn State at the time. He recruited me there, and it was just like a wild scene. And yeah, I was never much of a partier, and that was just kind of, I know it's changed probably since then, but it was just like too big. And I remember looking at Middlebury, like a small school that maybe play hockey and lacrosse. But that was really kind of the extent of it. And yeah, once I got down to Georgetown, visited there, it was like, too good of an opportunity to pass up.
How many students were I guess at the time would have been at Georgetown?
Yeah, like it's like 7,500, so it's not too big, but kind of big enough. So, yeah, obviously a big change for me being from Orangeville and then going down to Washington, D.C. It was right around 9/11 too, so pretty intense time. But yeah, I always say like my head coach is an awesome guy. He's from Buffalo, kind of that just humble upstate guy. And so it kind of was a nice grounding presence, like a good balance from being in Washington, D.C. and kind of felt right. I've always kind of, I'm sure you guys have felt that, like upstate guys just playing with different upstate guys. I feel like Canadians and upstate guys get along well.
They always gravitate to one another. I got a random question that kind of popped in my head because I remember it was actually at the U19 Team Canada camp years ago, but Joe French was always telling these stories about like these secret societies at Georgetown or something. Like, is that something that you had ever heard of?
I wasn't in those circles though.
I don't know. It was, and again, it could have just been blowing smoke, but it was, it was like these kind of like Georgetown pipeline to the government type secret societies. That was just madness. But
there's definitely you definitely felt some of that government influence. Like even some of my, I was actually, now that you mentioned, I was in class. I went to a few classes with Donnie Trump's son.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Which one, Eric? The one that's really loud?
No, blonde.
The blonde guy? Okay, yeah.
I don't know. As you would expect, he's kind of douchey, but.
Yeah,
yeah. He literally wore a suit to class.
Oh, see, like you should have given him the Brody Merrill soccer uniform treatment. Get out of here, buddy. We don't need you wearing that here.
Definitely a little bit of that at Georgetown, kind of the preppiness and the government influence guys that were going on to politics. And like I remember being in a few classes, like how serious I took lacrosse is how serious some of these students would take classes at Georgetown, and especially in the politics. And yeah, I definitely needed some guidance to be able to get through and take the right courses as I went along to get through it. So,
yeah, I was just saying, how many more years of junior did you have when you were at Georgetown?
So I think it was just one. It was one year. So I went there after going to Salisbury. So I was a little bit older going to school, so I think it was just my 21-year-old. I remember coming back after my freshman year. It was, you definitely felt a big change, like especially at that time, there wasn't a lot of guys that were like training consistently. And so after going, and that was my first time, I remember even like picking up a weight was when I was at Georgetown, and then coming back and playing junior lacrosse, you definitely felt, and that was more so when I was starting to hit my stride as a player. And, you definitely felt that advantage of playing, because again, there wasn't, it's in recent years, I'd say like if you look at junior A, a lot of guys are playing NCAA, but in our, in my time, there was a kind of a handful of guys sprinkled across the league.
So yeah. And most of them were like offensive guys too. Like again, for like Chris Sarrison being a goalie, Kyle being a goalie, like that was like almost unheard of. But the reason I asked is because when you were in your fifth year, I would have been coming in as a rookie, as a goalie in Burlington. And I remember, like, I'll always remember this vividly. We were playing in the Bunny Barn, and we would, like, try and break out the ball. And Broad's, like, no word of a lie, would just come on the floor, strip a guy, and just run back on offense. And it probably happened no less than, like, three or four times. So in between their intermission, our, like, game plan was, like, hey, if Merrill comes near you, you got to get rid of the ball because you're just going to steal it from you. So, like, well,
I remember watching Flip Sanderson was unbelievable at that. He was so good at, like, even for a smaller guy, the advantage of being taller. But, I mean, he was my favorite player growing up watching him, and he would throw these crazy over-the-head checks. So, I remember, in junior at that time, I was trying all those things, and he was definitely a big influence on me that way.
Were you guys good in junior, Brody? How many did you win?
We were up and down. So my favorite year, my favorite team in lacrosse was in 2000. We ended up losing. A lot of my buddies are on this team, so I hate even bringing it up. But to Burnaby, I don't think they had one player from Burnaby on their team, but it's kind of an all-star team from the East and all over, like Snyder and the Ray brothers and Mark Miashta and a bunch of guys. But Evans, Roik was in net. So we ended up losing to them in game six. But it was just there was a lot of brothers on the team, like Patrick and Brandon, Kyle and I, and also just a lot of guys that we had grown up with. So that was a really special year. We came up, that was the best team that I had played for with the Northmen. We're still really close. I'm still really close to a lot of those guys to this day. As I mentioned, Petey Beltman, Chad Culp was a young little shit on that team. that was awesome. But it was just coming into his own. And a lot of great Johnny Harrism we got from out west, and Kevin Howard, who's just like a beauty. It was just a really good mix of guys.
That's great. We'll kind of jump in again. I've had you for a little bit here, but we'll jump into the NLL stuff. Going into this draft, where was the draft, and did you have an idea of where you were going to land?
Yeah, so it's funny because Lindsay went on to coach the Philadelphia Wings, and we were obviously super tight, and they had the number 2 overall pick, and then it was originally going to be the first overall pick, but it was expansion. So actually Edmonton and Portland came in, so they got bumped to 3. And I had accepted a job in Washington, D.C., going to do commercial real estate there, and I was going to play for the Wings, and then things kind of changed. And Derek Keenan, who I didn't know at all at the time, I think he emailed me on my Hotmail account. Still remember a long email, and just saying, you know, that he was going to pick me, it was really good for me because I didn't know anybody on the team at all. It was a lot of Whippy guys and guys, you know, usually with most teams you have a little bit of a connection with, and I kind of went in there pretty cold, the draft was actually in Edmonton. I remember flying out to Edmonton, and that was a pretty cool experience, and at the Rexall Center there, I don't know if you guys remember, but like Angela Batinovich was our owner, and she was like maybe 4 or 5 years older than me. So a really cool story. Like, I mean, she was awesome, but she was kind of more like a peer, it felt like. It was a really neat time in Portland. We ended up having like a really good start, and it was a city I had never been to before. It's a really cool, I hope one day they can bring it back there, because it's a really cool smaller city with a, you know, neat vibe to it, and so I have a lot of great memories from my time in Portland.
How did that owner own a team, or what's the story there?
Well, yeah, it's a funny story. So she was dating Lee Zink. You guys know that name? He's like, yeah, an awesome field defenseman, and I think this is what, like, this was a rumor that the commissioner would do this a lot, but this was random. Like, they were living in Colorado, and they went to a Mammoth game, right? And so she came from a lot of money, and actually it was her and her dad, and her dad was an awesome guy, really successful real estate guy. And so she was dating Lee Zink and kind of doing the math, like, whoa, this is like, how much do the guys get paid? What, they're getting paid like 10 grand, you know, whatever it was at the time. And so, yeah, she ended up, I think, maybe buying the Anaheim Storm and then eventually bought her own, like maybe a portion of the Anaheim Storm, and then, you know, got a new franchise in Portland. And so I ended up down, this is really NLL, but so my college, I ended up living, like, they didn't have a place for me to start. So I was living in Angela's house with Dallas Eliak, who was like a veteran goalie at the time in his mid-late 30s. Him and I were like living in the basement of her house. And she started dating one of the guys on our team at the time, Adam Bicep. And he was working for the team and playing for the team. And they were really living together. And they eventually got married and had a kid together, and he only played for the team, and he was a great, great guy too. So it didn't feel as weird as that.
it's almost weirding you out as you're telling the story.
it didn't feel that way in the moment.
Just felt right. Yeah, just felt
pretty wild. Derek, as you guys probably know, is like a no BS guy and just like such a solid kind of presence. And so he would kind of nip anything that would, you know, that would come up. But yeah, so it was a pretty unique situation. And that's when like Derek and I got really close there and formed a really tight relationship through my time there. So yeah.
And we'll kind of jump forward a couple of years. I mean, you mentioned it, you guys started off pretty well. Maybe take us through your memories of 2008 with that trip to the finals.
Yeah, so this is another funny NLL thing. Hopefully we don't go back. We're moving forward.
Yeah.
But we had, so Dan's team, Dan Dawson's team in Arizona folded, but they said it was only going to fold for a year. They're just going to take a year off. They're going to come back the next year. So in the meantime, we'll lend out players. So we got Dan Dawson and Brad McDonald, but it was only going to be for 1 year. And we knew that they were going to go back to Arizona at the end of the year. Okay, so we ended up not having a great start to the year, and then kind of picked it up late, squeaked into the playoffs. But it was kind of, I feel like in hindsight, it was probably the best lacrosse that Dan and I had ever, like, we're kind of at the same time in our primes, and Dallas was like holding on by a thread in net, and like stole a couple of games in the playoff. We played Pauly with like his rookie year.
Scored my first goal against Dallas Eliak in that game. Not a big deal.
So, and then, yeah, it was, I remember playing in the finals that year, and like in Buffalo, like the ground, like feeling the ground shake on the turf. It was so, you know, so loud in there, and it was just kind of a back and forth game. We had some great chances to win it. And that was when Steinhaus and JT were, you know, doing their thing kind of in their prime too. And so, just came up a little bit short, but. So we kind of thought we were just starting to kind of build something. And then, so the rent-a-player thing, right? So the year is up, but Arizona's not coming back. So they decide, so we're like, all right, sweet. Like, we get to keep Dan and Brad, like Brad and yeah. A couple pieces. But they're like, oh no, Boston's coming in and maybe another team, Chicago. So we're going to, I still don't know the reason. It hasn't been explained to me that they're getting lumped in now to a new expansion draft. So then that's how he ended up in Boston, right? Because wow. He, you know, being the expansion pick. So, and then it was like a year after, that's when Portland ended up folding, and yeah, kind of went from there. Yeah, Derek ended up going to Edmonton, and it's so the last game. So we're kind of watching after Portland got folded. It was Toronto and Edmonton were playing the last game of the year, and whoever lost that was going to get the first pick in the dispersal draft. And so Edmonton ended up losing it, and then Derek got the call to be the coach and GM. And I remember my wife Alex being like, "You're not, you please." Like I'd been going back to Portland back and forth. You're not going to Edmonton, like. And literally, right when she said that, she could see my phone. It was Derek Keenan. And she's, "You're not going to Edmonton." And I kind of duck into the other room and I'm kind of talking with Derek for a little bit. And we're like, you know, we're going to pick up this guy. And Edmonton was terrible at the time. And I come out of the room like, yeah, I'm going to Edmonton. So the compromise I got her, the dog's still kicking. It's still alive. She said, "All right, you're getting me a dog then."
How many years ago was that?
So that was 2 years. That was like 2010. I felt like I've had a couple different stops where it's felt like Edmonton was in last place and it was kind of like a rebuild, but we ended up picking up some great, like Gavin Prout was kind of how I talked about with Dallas. He was like on his last legs and had a great year. We ended up making it to the conference finals that year. And so I don't know if you guys would like, there's a clip. It goes to overtime. We're against a stealth and it's like a 50-50 loose ball. And like, we're both reaching for it. Rabel picks it up. Rabel's playing for the stealth and goes in, like jukes a guy and then buries in overtime. And they ended up winning that year. But it was cool. I mean, I loved Edmonton. It was a great, smaller city, and it got really, I would say I had two, like one amazing year there. Like when people ask me that year, like, "What's Edmonton like?" "Oh, it's not that bad. Like it's cold, but it's, and then, you know, the people are awesome." And then the next year we didn't have a very good year. And it was like, Edmonton felt like the worst. Like every time I see David's face right now, my second year in Edmonton, where you're just kind of miserable. And that, you know, when you're winning, it's everything, you know, all your problems and, you know, the grass is greener, the sky's bluer, as we know.
Yeah. Winning solves all problems. That's the name of the game. But so from there, you get traded to Philly. Is that right?
Yeah. So I can kind of see, you know, Edmonton, you know, these little signs would come up at different times. And I had hinted to Derek that I wanted to get east. It was more probably my wife, you know, on me. So I think it had been in the works a little bit that off season. Again, we didn't do very well that previous year. And so, I remember getting a call. It was actually a really cool moment. Brandon Miller was kind of the first person I heard from who was playing for the Wings at the time. And obviously go back a long way with him. So I got to join Pauly and Dan again, get reconnected. And that was something that was, again, they were joining another last place team. They had the first pick overall with the expansion and the entry draft. So getting traded there, they had some good pieces like Paul, like Brandon had some good pieces. And then Dan and Kevin Crawley. And so we had like a really good thing, a good start to that year. And we you know, had a good season. We lost in a tight one to Rochester and then Philly wanted to go American.
Yeah, we were so close there. We were building something. We thought we had the right mix of American Canadians. And then, yeah, after that year, it just went, flip-flop. The gyps flip-flopped on us.
It's you know, it's hard. Like I think in players, for young players, it's like so much of it is like your kind of career is like so dependent on the leadership that you have around you, and you know, and so again, it's you know had some really, I love Philly. It was a great city, and but we had, it's frustrating to look back on it because we had a really good core, and you know, the team wasn't doing well attendance wise, and so I think they wanted to go all the funny. I mean, it's not funny in hindsight, but like, they wanted to go all American, but in 2014, the U.S. coaches said to all the American players that not to play in the NLL.
That doesn't help.
So it was like all our best players.
The decision was made before that, or even after that, that they're going to go American, and then all of a sudden it was like, now we don't have any good American players to play on the team anymore.
So it just became like a random mix of like that. Like, yeah, it was bad.
But, just to fill in for the,
well, some good moments and some good experience, and playing with Dan and Paul, and you know, Halsey was one of my closest buddies in the game, and Brandon and I had some really good memories there too. And so it wasn't all bad. It's just more like, what if, kind of dwell on that a lot. In hindsight, but yeah, and then I actually really appreciated Mike French and Lisk. I had found out that I'd already had my daughter at the time, and I was finding out I was having twins, and they agreed to trade me back to Toronto at the time.
I mean, touching on maybe just you kind of talked about it a little bit, but what, any funny stories or anything from Dan and Paul playing together on that team?
Oh man. I mean,
none that my wife can hear on this.
Both these guys in different ways, like they're sarcastic. You don't know if they're like serious or joke. Like I do, knowing them so well, but other guys don't. And the pranks, and like Dan with the prank calls, like the pretending to be a reporter. Like we'd be sitting in the hotel room after a game, and he'd call somebody on the team, pretending to be a reporter. He'd have it on speakerphone. And I just has that special talent of just being able to hold it together with that stuff. But no, man, these guys, I mean, we're all really close. So it was a really fun year, and it was a great mix of players, but. You guys always kind of stay. It kind of reminds me of Patrick and I. Like you go at it sometimes, but you kind of also know when not to push each other's buttons too. So, yeah.
Oh yeah. No, that's it good. Was. It was those were all yeah those were I mean I, again you know obviously going later on playing for and with Patrick, like there's some of your fondest memories, but yeah, you still always have that like brother stuff and whatnot, but
travel that comes up, and you're grumpy, yeah. And you miss a plate, and you start getting on each other a little bit.
Back to like when you're 7 years old, when your brother beats you in battle on the front porch or something.
What's the only way to solve missing this flight? All right, we got a fight in the airport. So from there, I mean, you talked about it. You get traded back, or you're back home, kind of local. What was that like? I mean, I think it would have been 2015. You guys made it to the final there.
Yeah, that was a really emotional year because I remember getting traded. Terry Sanders to kind of come in full circle, and it was for the first time in my career, you know, kind of having, you know, being through Portland and Edmonton and Philly, like Toronto was established. Toronto was full of like winner, veteran leader, and the team was, you know, ready to win. And you know, I'd made a few moves in the off season. And I remember Terry, like, you know, meeting with him in the Tim Hortons. I know a lot of guys have stories like that with T, meeting in the Tim Hortons, you know, hey, I still have the post-it note actually with like my contract. I can't pay you as much as Doyle, right? Like he's, you know, I just can't. All right. And I'm like, yeah, I get a T, whatever. Like just, I'm just happy to be here. And you know, it was really actually surreal to play for the Rock and joining Patrick and Shooter and all the guys, and actually and Doyle and Garrett had just had season ending injuries. So there was, and then right before the season, T passed away suddenly, right in the fall. And I was actually just, you know, talking with John Level, who reached out after I retired, and just like that first team meeting after T had passed away, and John, it's the most memorable moment in the NLL that I've had. It's just the feeling in that locker room and the emotion, and it was a really kind of, you know, we definitely felt T, and we played for something. You know, we were playing for him that year, and it was like a magical year that way. Like it was, I went like, actually, Garrett Billings has a good line. It's like, when you have a great team, everybody says winning's so hard, but when you're on a really good team, winning's actually easy. You know, like it feels, and I remember just like demolishing teams. Like, I'm like, guys, this is crazy. Like, I've never been on, like, I've usually been on some receipt, you know, playing on some bad teams where it's like taking your lumps, and where it's like we're just rolling and winning handily. And yeah, like it was the only regret was just not finishing it off. We kind of gotten over the hump of, you know, beating that Rochester team in the semis in a mini game. Are we still allowed to use that term? I don't know. We should probably stop using that term. Forget it.
Bad news for guys.
But yeah, and then it was a big hump we got over, and then a little bit of a letdown in the finals. We ended up losing to that young Rush team with Mark, and they were kind of up and coming there. So but overall, it was just an amazing year and kind of surreal to be back playing for the Rock, and always, you know, went to games in the Maple Leaf Gardens growing up, and just like, I don't know, I'd always traveled. I'd have to say that I'm probably the most traveled guy in the NLL when it comes to like air miles and flying all over the place. And where it was nice, I was living in Oakville at the time and practicing at the track and being sleeping in my own bed after games. It was, it was a pretty amazing, amazing experience. So, and just a top notch organization. And so that was a really, really memorable time.
Well, and I mean, you played with your brother that year too, right?
Yeah, it was kind of a neat progression with the Rock. So it was, and I've been that, it's funny, you'll see certain teams where everybody kind of gets old at one time, but you have your last legs, right? Like, so it was Patrick, it was Josh, it was, Doyle ended up coming back. Actually, like right in the semifinals was like the first time he had played that year. But it was just a great group of veteran guys, Casey Burens, Ryan Marshall, B was in net. And so the next year, you know, there was a lot of injuries and guys kind of getting old and some turnover. And then, that's when Shriver came in and Kieran, and it kind of like rejuvenated the team and you know, had a really good draft with like Challen and Luttrell, and so that's kind of what you're seeing them all now and where they're at. So I kind of got to be a part of that little transition there.
It's another name that just announced his retirement there, in Kieran McArdle.
So I was playing against those guys. So Kieran, Tom and Tommy and Jordan Wolf were like by far the three best field players. And Robbie Hellier actually tore his shoulder going into that year. We just had a tough year, and I was like, oh man, like I remember seeing these three guys play, and just like, no, like they're in their early 20s. Like no one's drafted. They're straight free agents. And I think Josh was the assistant GM at the time with the Rock, and going to Jamie and Josh, I'm like, you guys should try to sign these guys, like they're free agents. And Jordan Wolf's like, no, I'm not playing.
I'm all set.
And like Kieran and Tommy, I remember talking to Tommy. He's like, yeah, like I'll come up and try it. And it, like Kieran was actually like hit the ground running. Like in his game, you can probably see that, like, with his field game, it would translate pretty well. And Tommy, I remember, like, the first couple practices, he was like, the guys were like, what? You know, like, he was switching hands, and it was like, it didn't look very pretty. And then, but gradually, like, it seemed like every practice was like, holy shit, like, he's, you know, he just, and he's so smart, and like, he was picking up things so quickly. And I remember, like, our exhibition game against Buffalo, we had like 3 or 4 goals, and it's like, wow, we got something special here. And Kieran was like a really, maybe a little bit under the radar with Tom, but he was really good player and awesome, awesome. Both those guys were awesome teammates. And so they, you know, as we know, like some Americans can be hit or take it or leave it, but those guys were all in and have done really well.
No, I mean, so then we'll, I mean, moving on from there, we'll step into kind of the free agency time period in your life. I mean, we've had guys on here, obviously in our sport, it's pretty unique where it takes quite a long time to get the opportunity to become a free agent. And, you know, I think we've said it before, everybody wants options until they have to make a choice. What was that like for you kind of going through that process and having to sort out what was best for you?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And Paul, I think recently gone through to kind of talking about it, right? Like it is emotional, and it's, you know, I was in a really unique position in that, you know, Patrick had just been named head coach and GM in San Diego. You know, as I mentioned, I kind of worked so, like, it had taken me so long to get to Toronto, and I was having such a good experience there, and the team, you can tell the team was starting to take off there. So, but then you have this new, like, really exciting opportunity, you know, in San Diego, and to do it with my brother. I was also, again, older than most are at that time. It might've been 38. So there was a lot of things going through my mind, whether it be retirement or, you know, obviously going back to Toronto was where I was initially. I didn't think I'd ever leave. And then at the end of the day, it was like, man, what would I look back on like 20 years from now, right? What, you know, if I hadn't taken that opportunity to do it with Patrick and to kind of, you know, take that leap of faith, I think I would have regretted it. And I'm really thankful that I did. And you know, obviously he's my brother, but he's also, I think, objectively, like, it's like the most, you know, like a relentless, you know, leader that I've been around. And so I knew, especially not knowing that I didn't have a lot of time left playing, that I wanted to kind of, place my bets with him. Right. And I'm really thankful that I did.
So did you have to buy, your wife another dog when you told her you're going to San Diego, or how did that work?
Kind of the opposite. So there's a lot of little things that went into it. And, you know, so again, it was really good situation in Toronto, but she, like, once it was San Diego, like she has, like, you guys have played there, I'm sure, but it's an amazing city. And so, it wasn't really a hard sell for her, and she you know, we took a trip out there and she instantly fell in love with it. And that was also really neat. You know, it's funny, I remember talking to Dane Doby about this as he was making his decision. It's like the husband is more kind of focused on the lacrosse and the wife is more focused on kind of everything, you know, like, and for her, like, in that experience with my family, getting to stay there, like, we spent a lot of extended stays there and we're well taken care of by the team. And, you know, those are memories with my family that I'll never forget, and spending Christmases in San Diego and on Coronado Beach. And, you know, it was pretty special. And so it was actually the other way around to an extent, where she was really pushing me to go for it and to take that chance. And, again, it was a great experience.
Yeah, maybe I guess kind of one thing that's, you know, a little bit current, and I think, you know, as we're talking here, I think the first episode has come out, but what was it like having them film everything around you for this, like, war on the floor thing?
Yeah, I saw the resurface. I was kind of hoping that would go away because I hadn't heard from it in a while, and that was 2 years ago now, right? So
yeah.
You know, I'm sure it's like a lot of those things. It's similar, I think, to the PLL where it's, you know, I don't know, like I'm maybe a little bit old school where I think the locker room's kind of like a sacred place. Like, but I know things have changed that way and you kind of get used to it too, right? And Jay, you know, Jay Jalbert is a friend of mine, you know, played against him and he's an awesome guy. And so you knew he was going to do something pretty cool with it. And so you just went for it. I don't know. I'm sure it'll be fun to look back and reflect on. I'm sure there'll be some moments that I'll cringe at, but yeah, in the same breath that, you know, it's again, Jay's a really talented guy and it'll be cool. Bittersweet, I think, just for the way that season ended. But overall, to look back on those memories, I think will be pretty cool.
Kind of like not like switching gears, but just like playing for Patrick and then playing with Patrick. What are like not so much like fond memories of it, but like what was like the difference? I think it's like something so unique that you've got to play with your brother, then play for your brother.
Yeah, no, it's people ask me that a lot, and it's. It was actually, I'm sure, it was very easy, like, and it kind of like big brother, little brother relationship, like, and it was like that playing with them, you know, got to play with them in junior and throughout senior. I'm sure you can relate to that. But, you know, as a coach, it's similar, right? And also being kind of older in my career, but he's also not one, like, I think you take, like, him and my mom are similar this way. Like, he's not going to beat around the bush. Like, he's very direct. And so it was just so many cool memories that way. Like, and it's kind of funny. I'll point to one where it was the COVID year, and we got off to a bad start in our season. And we were, like, in a must-win against, and he was feeling the heat, like, you know, there was pressure and we had this great season the year before and didn't get off to a good start. And we had this overtime win in Vancouver, and it was just excitement. And we just had a big hug on the floor. And I think we were like 1-4 at the time. It was like the biggest one, like, you know, the biggest 1-4 win. Like, I'll hold that win up as one of my most memorable wins because it kind of, then we turned things around and kind of got rolling in that season. And but it was like, I think we're all feeling the pressure and you know how it is with your brother. When he's stressed, you're stressed. Right. And yeah, you kind of, you feel a different weight to it. And so you're a little bit more sensitive to things. I'm sure it's kind of vice versa too. But I know, you know, him and playing with him, he's just somebody that you want in your corner. And so I knew kind of in my latter stages of my career, who else would I rather trust with that than, you know, like my best friend, right? So, but it was very like the coach player thing was very natural, and he would, you know, it didn't feel, you know, I don't know, maybe for teammates it would feel a little bit weird at times, but try to really respect that coach player dynamic. And I never was really one to like to meddle with, like, I would try to give that advice to young players too, like, be a player, you know, don't worry about who's in the locker room, what the trades that are going on and all that kind of stuff. Is that your job's hard enough as it is? And so, I always kind of respected that coach player dynamic. It also helped having Billy and Josh there, two of my like most well-respected teammates and guys that I really looked up to in the game as being there as well. And Billy and I, you know, being a defensive coach, we were like this, right? And you know, you'd be hard pressed to find a better person in the game than Billy. So I know you hear that a lot, Paulie, in your family. I know it's
we call him Ryan in our family.
There's something to that though. So and Josh, you know, again, was kind of an idol for me growing up, and then Steve Govett too, and his, you know, his impact and leadership there too. So Yeah, and it always starts with the top, right? I think in every successful organization, with Joe being there and kind of his humility and how he runs things, and you know, like it's kind of a cool story. Our first ever game in Colorado, we popped on the bus. He's like, "Hey, you know, I like it physical." So, like, all right, Joe likes it physical. Let's go. I think in the first, like, you know, 5 minutes, we're punching guys and, you know, greasing guys. And,
that's good. You know, kind of capping things off here, what for you, what went into the decision for you to decide it was time to walk away from the game?
Yeah, I felt like I've been probably chasing it a little bit in the last few years, and it was always, I feel like I've been saying, oh, I want, you know, just one more year. And you know, it's hard, as you guys, you know, like it's, and sometimes maybe you're the last to know when it's, when it's time to hang them up. And, you know, it felt like I was still, you know, still healthy-ish, you know, for the most part. And now I think the driving decision for me was just like my family and not really wanting to miss any, you know, any of my kids' sports and you know, it's and the travel and the game itself is the fun. I'm not going to say it's the easy part, but it's what we love and what we're passionate about. It's kind of the challenge and the struggle is kind of everything else that goes into it. You kind of you can. It's not a, you know, as you guys know, it's not a, something that you can kind of go half in on, and you're going to get hurt, or you're not going to last very long. And so that was always my thing. You know, if I can go all in on it, and I just felt like I couldn't do that anymore and compromise other aspects of my family life or my professional life. And so that's when I knew. And I, you know, I'm 42. So it was time. And so felt pretty confident in that.
Do you miss it at all right now or no? I know it's so early.
I do and I don't. Like, I mean, I love, like, some people kind of dread a training camp. Like, I love training camp. I love, like, the first runs. I still, one of my, a good advice that I got from Chris Schiller, who, former teammate of Paul and I, he's, like, one of my closest friends in the game. When he retired, he kind of went, is like, you know, one of those, I can't wait till I retire. I'm not going to train. I'm not going to do anything. Eat what I want. And he's like, man, I got pretty down. I got pretty depressed. I couldn't sleep. He's like, man, just keep on some kind of routine. Keep working out. Keep training. So I feel like that's helped. And it's kind of staying in that routine and stay active. And I'm kind of immersed in my kids' sports too. So that's helped. But I do miss the game. I miss, you know, you kind of, it's that feeling in the air this time of year, right? It's like that buzz where it's like, and you know, everybody's 0-0, right? Everybody's got that aspiration to be the last team standing. And so, yeah, I mean, I think anyone that retires and, you know, you're going to miss those different aspects of it. And I'm probably going to struggle with that at different times if I'm being honest, but in the same breath, I know that I'm very fortunate and really grateful. Like, it's kind of been, yeah, put that in perspective with all, like, you know, in the last month or so, just hearing from different teammates and sharing different memories over the years. I can't be anything but just thankful.
That's great, man. Great way to summarize it. But we've had you for a while here again. Just kind of want to touch on quickly. I'm sure we could do an entire episode on it, but the Hill Academy, what's your kind of origin story there? How did things get going? We don't have to go kind of fully into the weeds, because like I said, we could talk for a while, but how did things get started there?
Yeah, it was like, I like to say there was big plans for it, but it was really like, it happened really like, I don't know, randomly, I guess. And it's incrementally. And my parents were both phys ed teachers and were kind of getting into retirement but not really ready to retire. And my brother and I were both back home and just had graduated. And it was really kind of my dad taking a leap of faith, really you know, my experience down at Salisbury, and then, you know, my sister was, you know, national level track athlete. She's played, you know, lacrosse at U of T, played on the national team as well. So we, education, sport, were always a bit like kind of staples in our house. So yeah, it just started really small with, you know, a class of under 20 students. And then like every year it's just growing a little bit. And you know, the last, I think 4 years ago, we transitioned into a new campus up here just outside of Orangeville. So a lot's changed, you know, lots stayed the same too. But you know, for me, it's been a dream job, and it's been pretty neat to be a part of. And my parents have since retired, so you know, working alongside my brother and sister, and you know, obviously all the great staff that we have there and coaches. So yeah, so now my daughter is at the Hill, and my two sons will be there next year. So it's and a lot of former teammates, I'm now coaching their sons, which is and daughters. Some daughters are at the school too, and you know, it's been pretty neat. Whether, you know, I remember Jeff Teed as a ball boy, Dyson Williams, you know, coming with us to our Man Cup trip out there, that crazy Man Cup trip.
Yeah.
You know, Dylan Watson and you know, Corden Lee and all the Sandersons, Kruger. You know, so it's neat. Things are coming full circle, but it's yeah, it's pretty cool.
What was the first year of the Hill Academy?
It was right after I graduated, 2006, and it was a wild group of kids. We had like Andrew Suter, the Harnett brothers. You know, it was crazy.
Starting off with a bang there.
Like, one of the 20 schools that Suter went to for high school and college. It's on his tour.
Yeah, he was awesome, man. And we still kind of laugh about some of the early stories, but you know, and then the next year it was like the Noble brothers, Randy Statz. Randy Statz was like in grade 9 was the best high school lacrosse player in, you know, in all of, like, we go down and he was facing off, playing both ways. He was unbelievable. And I remember actually Bob McMahon was like, right, this kid is, you know, you gotta bring this kid to the Hill, and lucky we did. And then getting to play with Audie later was he really was a catalyst for us, Randy, just with his competitiveness. And then, you know, the Noble brothers, the Ritchie brothers were kind of in those early days, Dylan Ward. I think back to that, actually, they're really ultra competitive guys, and that helped us. And we had, you know, some Western guys, Travis Como, Nils Thompson. So it was they helped kind of put us on the map, that group.
Now, do you have you got any kind of funny story about hiring Polly to work at the Hill?
It wasn't Broads.
It was this Noble.
Him and pretty close. And it was pretty cool though, having Paul there and Damo and some other guys through there. But that's what I enjoy the most about it, is being able to work alongside the, you know, some great people in the game too. He's, for a tall man, he shouldn't be that like flexible. So he's got like, you know, all those weird mobility drills that you do. And he's always like, you know, I don't know. He's got a band. He's always doing something with a band. He's, you know, going on through hurdles and, you know, but that's why he's still playing.
Still doing it. That's what keeps him young.
Good beat up.
He's trying to chase
number three. Probably 100% of the league. I don't know if there's any takers for you these days, though.
I don't know. My wife would have a jammer, I think.
She'd be screwed. She's got the wire crossing ability too. She'd be cheering in the background.
Yeah.
When your kids start getting, like, I think I scarred my daughter once, you know, getting body slammed by Zed Williams. I think that was when she saw that, I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm done with that.
I guess kind of two things before we let you go. First one is kind of piggybacking off the Hill, like, you know, obviously you mentioned the new campus and everything. What is there any kind of future plans or anything, you know,
new, or is it just kind of, you know, maintaining that steady growth for you guys and the continued pipeline?
Yeah, no, it's because two of those years were over COVID when we transitioned to our new campus, which was a crazy time. And, you know, I always give those kids a ton of credit in that generation of kids. So it's kind of feeling like we're just settled now on our campus. We're growing. It's really neat. We're growing down, like we're going K through PG next year. So, yeah, so it's growing. It's growing younger and you're kind of seeing this in a good way. There's a lot more interest from female student athletes, or our female demographic is really growing, which is awesome, especially for a father with a daughter that's a young student athlete. It's pretty neat to see that. And so those are kind of the two areas that we've been growing in our elementary program and then our female student population.
That's great. And then last one to cap it off, where's the inspiration for your jersey number come from?
Yeah, so that it initially started with so Dustin Sanderson had a bad accident his midget year, and he broke his neck, got hit from behind in Brampton and broke his neck, and so had to, you know, he was able to recover and you know, but he wasn't able to play lacrosse again. And so that was my first year going to Georgetown. And so Matt and I, we both wore number 17 that year just to kind of recognize him. And Chris, then after Chris Sanderson had passed, obviously a close friend and mentor for me with Team Canada, I got to wear that in 2014. And so that was a really, really big honor for me. And so I've always stuck with that. So it originally comes from Dustin and kind of like that was, so the brothers in the Sanderson family, that was Phil, who was like another one of my junior coaches that type of guy that you'd run through a wall for. He just like huge heart. And so he was the original 17. So it kind of goes back to, you know, kind of the Sanderson family and the impact they've had on me. So every time I put that 17 jersey on, it was always something special for me.
That's awesome.
Really, that's cool. Unreal. I knew. I always saw it was because of Chris. I didn't know it originated with Dusty. That's pretty cool.
It was neat because, like, you know, when you're a freshman, you don't usually get the random number. You get like, you know, number 53 or something like that. And honestly, it was like, hey, you know, here's number 17, you know, and so it was like, wow, this is pretty cool. I remember, yeah, seeing Chris for the first time wearing that number and everything that Chris has done for Canadian lacrosse and that was, yeah, again, one of my favorite moments in the game was being able to win that gold medal right after Kyle and Chris had passed away. You know, it was highly emotional, but you know, that's what we love about the game is that it gives you those kind of opportunities. And you see those little symbols and signs if you're looking for them.
100%. That's unreal, man.
That's awesome. Well, again, we appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us, man. And can't say enough. I think it was pretty cool to see your posts and see, you know, even just taking a scroll through the comments, like all the different names of lacrosse leaving a comment for you, talking about, you know, maybe what you meant to them or you know, all those different things. So congrats on a fantastic career. Incredible. And thanks for, again, taking time to sit down with us and tell a little bit of your story.
Thanks, boys. I love this podcast too. I always enjoy listening to it. It's awesome. I love getting insights from the different guys, and you guys do an awesome job with it. So we appreciate you having me on. And good luck this year.
Thank awesome. You.
Thanks, Broads. I'm sure we'll see you soon.
Anyways, that was Brody Merrill.
what a chat. Some really cool insight into his career, what made him last so long in the league and perform so well. Holy shit, he's won some hardware. But yeah. Any what do we want to talk about here?
A couple notes. couple notes on the Brody thing. First of all, I stumbled through the intro. Not good. I'm not the intro guy. Everyone plays a role. I'm like 0 for fucking 7 on intros. I did just like was just looking into some stuff before the podcast, just some stuff that's kind of crazy. Obviously, Brody played for a few different teams, which he talked about in the interview. Back on Graham Perro's site, NLStats.com. Brody assisted 98 different players in his career. He assisted on their goals, which is just crazy, especially for a D guy. It never threw an assist to Paul, but Paul did have an assist to Brody on I had it here. Empty netter on January 27th, 2012. Paul Dawson to Brody Merrill while playing for the Philly Wings to ice a game against Buffalo. A piece of future back of the bird history there.
Wow.
And just the one connection there. Brody's most frequent goal, his most frequent assist person and his most frequent goals scored on his assist are both Dan Dawson, which is the same for both of you guys. So apparently everyone just feeds Dan and wow. Also feeds back. There's just a little fun fact. You know, I got some fun facts.
Dan's going to listen to that and say he made all three of our careers.
Yeah. Also, Paul doesn't know anything about lacrosse. He said Withers is going to be not in the top five face-off guys. He was in the top five. So tough one for Paul there.
Yeah. Hey, like Brody says in an interview, obviously you can't understand my sarcasm.
Yeah.
And maybe we touch on a little bit of that top five face-off. Just briefly, all-time hilarious. Top 15 defenseman, shout-out Jacob Rouet, notorious O-guy, coming in at number 14 on the top 15 defenseman list. That's a guy that's a Swiss Army knife. You're playing so well offensively that they were like, wow, I bet he would be a top 15 D guy. So shout-out Rouet. That's an incredible accomplishment in itself.
Bird belt.
Really turned his game around once he came on our podcast.
Yeah,
thanks. Hey. You're welcome, Rue.
Yeah, as so many others have done. If
if you want to play better, come on.
Yeah,
we'll get you an award for a position you don't play. If you want to, if you come on our podcast, but yeah, and some great feedback from last week's episode. So if you haven't listened to episode 99, give it a listen. Some pretty cool stuff there with the commish. Really smart guy, and you know, obviously it's great that he's at the helm. You know, outside of that, I guess around the league there's really you know, kind of transaction deadlines. I think rosters are due like Monday or Tuesday next week. So that's obviously the big next one that's circled in the calendar. Now some teams are off this weekend, some teams are on, just because it's like that 5 week window to do 4 weeks of camp. So, again, good luck to all the guys that are kind of going into that last week. This is where teams are made. And then we're into the mix here. So there's some exciting stuff going on, man. It's all, I think Bob, I was joking about this with a buddy at work the other day. There's a famous Bob Cole clip when Tampa Bay's playing, or no, Montreal, I think, is playing Boston, and he just goes, "Everything is happening." So that's kind of how I feel about what's going on right now. But is there anything else you guys wanted to kind of like touch on before we shut it down?
No, just, I mean, obviously it's transaction wise, Kieran McArdle, we kind of mentioned it, mm-hmm. In the interview, but just again, a guy you play with, I never played with him, just played against him, but we had him on the pod, and, you know, just kind of a cool story how he came to the league and excelled as an American, which, you know, is tough to do, but just congrats on a hell of a career for him, and all the best in the future for
players. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me there. And no, I just brought it up in the interview because I'm such a good friend. But yeah, all-time guy, had so much fun playing together. I found this the other day, on my phone, and I could kind of, you can see this if you're watching the video. That's a picture of me and McArdle after we both got we got naked mild basically, and had to in beer pong, and had to sit under the table for a whole game. And it was actually like right then we're sitting under the table, and I told him he was giving serious dad energy, and then he kind of paused, and I was like, "Holy shit, are you having a kid?" And I guess I was like the first person to find out. So it's kind of a hilarious little way that we stumbled into that. But yeah, it's just awesome, awesome guy. The game's gonna miss him, but again, opened up the gates for some Americans to come into this game. So awesome, congrats.
Yeah, for an American O guy, as good as he was, also fought a couple of times too, pretty hardcore. He's I have more played against him in the PLL. Just he's crazy, man. He's an awesome player. Just scores goals. So congrats on the end of the NLL road for him.
Yep. So does that do it for us? Episode 100. What do you think?
Real quick, just. So many good moments in that Brody interview. Another one of my favorites, just want to mention, was the player dating the owner. And then the what Brody reminded me of is when your buddy from home comes to college and you're like, "Oh, he's a beauty." And then you start telling him about all the weird shit that they do.
Yeah.
And and you're like, "Oh, now that I say it, it's kind
maybe we are a little nuts, or like you tell one friend group about like the things you do with another friend group.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh man, we're nuts.
Yeah. Halfway through that story, Brody was like, "Wait, this is pretty weird."
Yeah, that was good. That was good humor.
That's like, again, you kind of mentioned it, like that was peak old NLL. You had an owner dating a player, the player was on the team. But again, like, funny because it all ends up like being good. They're still married, like have kids and stuff, but just like, again, she was probably like mid-30s when she owned the team, so she was like still in the mix, like, and then she was a pretty good looking girl. So congrats Adam Byself. He also picked up a little bit of a sugar mom, but that's I never knew Brody and Dallas Elliott lived in the basement of her place. I think you throw Dallas Elick in a basement too. That's just got to be a whole nother case of crazies in there.
I got a feeling that guy wears his gear to bed. But
I think the two like epitome of the old NLL stories that we've had on the pod, at least to me, and you know, maybe I'll try to cut some of these up, was that one, and then Dan talking about Columbus and how they would rush to the bank because they didn't know whose checks were going to cash.
One in cash,
yeah. Couldn't be the last guy to the bank.
That's so funny. How far we've come. Sometimes you gotta look back to where you started to understand where you've come, and I think that puts it in perspective pretty good. Sometimes when we complain that, you know, maybe a meal's a little cold or it's not that great, I think you gotta think about the feet that walked before us so that we could run here. Again, we want to give a shout out to everybody that listens. Another thing, obviously we put this out on our social, but if you're looking for Christmas gifts, get some Back of the Bird merch, use code BOTB15, for 15% off. They're feeling generous there. So you're basically avoiding the tax and a couple extra points. So enjoy that. Get it for your family. If you love them, they'll be wearing that around. We want to see those pictures of stuff out there too.
I got a PLL code too. If you're looking for PLL merch, I'll put it in the show notes.
There you go.
Yeah, there's a little competition. If I win, I get some bonus. Don't think I'm going to win, but if you're looking for PLL merch, you don't have to buy my jersey.
Let's get these people going. Use Donnie's code. Is it just for your jersey that you can win?
Nope. I believe it's for all merch.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll use Donnie's code.
Using Donnie's code to buy another guy's jersey, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. That would be so fucked.
Donnie, you won the competition, but you didn't sell a single jersey.
We sold 150 Nolting jerseys, but they all had the Donnie's code.
Hey, I am thinking about just offering someone part of the winnings just to push me, like, trying to get a grassroots campaign here. Let's take on the big dogs. Let's take on the high earners in the PLL and see what we can do.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. So I'll get it posted by Friday.
Okay. Yeah. Get that out there. But yeah, again, thanks for everybody for listening. Thank you to Cottage Springs, Lucky Penny Media, the return from the deadline as supplements. I don't know what's going on there. I haven't gotten any text back, but hopefully it comes back to life. But yeah, we appreciate you guys and we'll chat with you. What'd you say?
They're still digging out of the grave. They're not dead. Yeah, yet. Like
you ever seen Kill Bill when the guy's doing like the 1-inch punch to get out of the coffin? That's what's going on right now with Lion Eyes. So yeah, we appreciate you guys and we'll chat with you next week for episode 101.
Peace.